So, guys, do I need any paper for this quiz?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 83 of Sapnin Podcast with a very, very good looking Sean Smith and my sometimes friend, always lover, no, shouldn't have said that, Morgan Richards, also known to millions around the world as Mo Dick.
That intro has confused me a lot. But yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. This is episode 83, and it's one full of earthbound adrenaline igniting a black flame.
Right, every week what we do is, before we do these podcasts, me and you end up talking, and we talk for so long that I forget about the beginning of the podcast, and it drives me wild. Yep, this week's guest are the fantastic Dan and Dav from Bury Tomorrow.
Yes, the champions of British metalcore.
Yes, we had a lovely chat, a very, very long chat, which is why we're trying to keep this short, and I might be speaking slightly quicker than normal. But yeah, we had a lovely chat with the boys. We covered all things band life, Twitch streaming, mental health, safe spaces.
Yeah, so I don't really want to quote the DreamWorks inspirational blockbuster of Shrek, but it's quite fitting, because this episode is like an onion. It's got many layers.
What? Did you do all that for that?
What?
Just to say it's got many layers and then just leave... There's not like another... Is there a punchline to that? Or you...
I was just going to tell people what the layers are.
Oh, okay. Carry on. And they might cry. There you go. Carry on. Tell people what the layers are.
As Sean mentioned, we get deep and tackle and talk really openly about a lot of mental health stigmas and issues. But at the same time, this conversation gets extremely silly with jokes about behind the scenes of backstage and band life, and very touching with the community connection Bury Tomorrow have created with their fans. We have to mention, recently, it's been a manic time for the band. Not only is Dan and Dav, as individuals, work for the NHS, having to deal with everything associated with COVID-19 pandemic, but balancing that with the release of their new and fifth record, Cannibal, that's going to be released now on July the 3rd worldwide on Music for Nations Records.
Yeah, it was fantastic to see the boys and get to catch up and have a chat. And yeah, I haven't seen them for quite some time, so it was absolutely lovely to see and hear from them again. And we've wanted them on for ages as well, so it's kind of the perfect time with their record coming out next week. So yes, it's all worked out.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, we just talk about a host of stuff. It's a great conversation. It'll hit so many different emotions. And we're not going to go on too much now because we want to get straight into this chat so you can hear it. But please remember to go and pre-order a copy of their new record that comes out next week. The singles they've released so far are heavy, aggressive, emotional. We're going to get into all of that. But please remember to go and follow us at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram to catch up with all the latest ongoings with the podcast. And let us know what you thought of this episode.
Yep, that's at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD. And we had absolutely zero entries for seeing how fast you could say that last week.
But also go and check out our lovely Patreon page at patreon.com/sapnin to get involved with our wonderful community and access to even more exclusive content from behind the scenes of this very podcast.
Yes, you've absolutely nailed that. And yeah, join our lovely community of absolute heroes who are some of the most beautiful people I've ever come across in my life. So supportive, so lovely to each other. And yeah, they keep buying each other presents and sending each other presents. It's mad. It's bonkers.
They don't buy me presents, but they buy each other presents. And that's all that matters, really.
Oh, no. They do buy you presents, but they come to my house.
What?
What?
So
anyway, that's patreon.com/sapnin. If you've enjoyed any of these 83 episodes and would like to support and help us.
And you're bound to, because we've talked literally all of your favourite bands by now. 83 episodes. Go back, listen to them all. Share it with your friends. Make sure you're subscribing wherever you're listening to this podcast as well. And me and Sean are going to get straight into this lovely conversation with the wonderful Dan and Dav of Bury Tomorrow.
Let's go. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Sapnin? Sapnin as well? I don't know. I wasn't prepared with my sapnin there.
Is that what we do?
Awful.
Yeah. It's all right. Loads of people. You want to see Americans. Americans get really, really confused.
Yeah, they do, to be honest.
They go, Sapnin! Especially when we're with them. We go, Sapnin! And they go, what the fuck is this? Huh? What language is that? But yeah, this week's guests are Dan and Dav from the awesome Bury Tomorrow.
Yes.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for doing this.
This has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Like, I think we spoke about doing this like when you first started this podcast, and it's just never come to fruition. So
yeah, guys.
No pressure.
That's it, man. We've run out of guests.
He's gone in early. He had to look off a cue card to know what our names were. It's like 10 years, mate.
Daniel. Anyway, how are you guys? How's lockdown treating you?
Yeah, how's things?
Well, it's all right. Me and Dan haven't really got to experience lockdown like the rest of you, though. We've had to work all the way through it. But yeah, I think it's weird.
Yeah, I'd love to be on furlough. That'd be fun. As Dav said, it's kind of weird because it's not just me that works for the NHS. Obviously, Jacko and Dav both do as well. So we're kind of a NHS band, really. So it's been one of those that we've, you know, albeit tough in the NHS and like hard work, at the moment, it lends us a degree of normality, really, in the whole thing, because we're going to work, we're getting paid, we're seeing people. So
apart from getting those breaks to you know, go on tour, that's really something.
Like, yeah, that, let's not talk about the music thing.
Yeah, the only good thing about like having a normal job is knowing, you know, it's only 2 months until I get in the bus again, and then that's gone, and I'm just like, oh, so this is what normal people feel like all year round. Like,
yeah.
Oh God, this is awful.
It's also that like feeling of, yeah, it's also that feeling of like, where if it had happened last year, that'd have been all right, because it was at the end of an album cycle, but it just happened to happen on our album cycle where we're like, ah, come on.
It's the fact that it's the whole year as well. Like the fact that I can't tell you right now when our first show of this entire album campaign is so fucked.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
This is the longest we've been as a band without playing a show. Like, and it 100% will be by a country mile by the time we play our first show. Like, that's...
Wow.
That's stupid. I haven't seen my band for the longest since I joined the band.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yes. Very, very strange times.
When you think you spend your entire life, you know, when you're in a band and you just spend your entire life in each other's pockets, to like be in a position where we're like 6 months since the last time we were all in the same room together. It's weird. Must be what Metallica feel like.
Or Blink-182.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Well, whatever you do, if you think that's weird, never, ever let your band split up. Never, please. I'm begging you now. Don't quit the band. Even if you think, oh, fuck it, it's all gone wrong. No, keep it, make it a weekend thing. Do whatever you can. Don't leave the band. I'm going to start crying now. Don't leave the band, boys. Don't leave the band. Oh, no.
You got so passionate about quitting his band, his cam fell down.
It's still a touchy subject for him. It's still a touchy subject.
Yeah, I'm just punching my phone like, oh, the bastards, I can't believe it. They left me. Yeah, don't let that ever happen, boys. Keep it going till you're 90. Because I wanted to be forever playing Children of the Night in pubs to two people. But no, the band quit. But yeah, it's been a really, really, really strange situation for us people who have not been in work. But yeah, how's it been, like you mentioned the NHS, like how's it been with you guys? How have you found, like, how's the response been to Corona and COVID or whatever?
I think it's a difficult time for everyone, isn't it, Dan? I mean, Dan is very much more involved with people's well-being during this mental time. That's basically what his job is making sure everyone keeps a head on their shoulders throughout this crazy madness. Like,
yeah. So I'm really, like, really lucky in my job role that I got made program lead for well-being, as Dav said. So it's kind of looking after the psychological well-being of staff, and I think that again lends me a kind of unique opportunity to not only kind of see where people are at mentally, but then also kind of be as close to COVID as I possibly could be without being a clinician. So, you know, I've seen people on ventilators and I've seen people in isolation and seen people who are probably not with us anymore, you know, and it's very, very harrowing to see, you know, and it puts it into perspective what I knew before COVID, in that, you know, I have the utmost respect for anyone that dons any kind of uniform and puts himself puts some other people first, really, within their life. You know, it's a massive commitment, and they continue to do it over this time.
Yeah, because one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about, especially, was, you know, since lockdown, with guests on the podcast, people have really been talking about not being able to be creative or finding different ways to be creative and stuff like that. But for the two of you, it must have just been such a stressful time right now, because not only, I think, going on with the band, trying to move a whole hype album cycle around, but just the personal side of it and working in healthcare and everything like that each day. I mean, for you, how has it been trying to juggle that with everything going on?
I've really struggled, if I'm completely honest. I, as I say, I joked earlier, I need the band just as much as I want to be in the band. I need to have time away from my job in order to be able to recuperate and kind of get my head into it. So what lockdown has been for me is because my job's always been pretty much like exactly the same level. Like just COVID hasn't changed my level of activity. It's just switched how I do it. But I've had to find myself like new ways of kind of interacting with people, because that's what me and Dan, particularly when we started, it's all we ever wanted to do, like reach out and kind of like meet people and chat with people and form like these kind of like bridges of communication between all worlds. And so I've gone a lot more into like digital world, like, and it's blowing my mind. But then I am sat here, you guys must feel it as well with like doing your podcast through like Zoom and stuff like that. Is why weren't we doing this before? Like, it's pure like there are certain points in my life where I'm like, why didn't I do this before? Why didn't I stream before? Why weren't we doing like Zoom chats with our fans? Like, why?
Yeah, I was going to say a really similar thing, and that actually, you know, the biggest part of this for us, or certainly for me personally, is that, you know, we can't play shows. You know, it sucks. It's, you know, when you're in a band, you want to do two things. You want to release music so people listen to it and can hear what your kind of vision is, and you want to play shows so you can see the people going off. And that's why we join bands. You know, it doesn't matter what genre you're in. That is what it's about. You know, so that sucks. You know, there is no getting away from us not being able to do that. There's a kind of unifying sense though. You know, it's not a label issue that the album's not out. It's not a, you know, bureaucracy that's caused us not to be able to play shows or cancel shows. You know, it is a unifying experience, so it kind of lends us a little bit of I can make peace with it a lot easier because it's a worldwide thing that every single band and human being is going through together. But as Dav said, there is also a level of like, you know, this album's unbelievably personal, you know, certainly to me and my mindset. And so there's been quite a nice amount of reprise in it and objectivity when, you know, to release songs and be able to kind of not be caught up in the madness and the, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of press conversations about something that's really intensely personal. You know, it's actually been quite a weird thing to write, you know, which is interesting, you know. And I think when you're in a band, and certainly when you've been in a band for like 13, 14 years, it's really, really different. It's very hard to find new things that are, you know, really different and kind of make you think, oh, wow, we've never done it that way before. And this has absolutely thrust us into a position where we're kind of like, oh, okay, this is new. This is a new thing for us. And you know what? In that sense, it's kind of nice, you know?
I think we're Bury Tomorrow. With Bury Tomorrow, we've always been almost like that community mentality rather than like band fans. Like, we've always tried to like perpetuate that with our fans. And I think the lockdown has kind of made that even more so. Some of the stuff that we've done, like, we were doing like as early as like 2 or 3 weeks in, we were doing like Bury Tomorrow quizzes with them on Zoom, like where we just like would invite everyone onto a Zoom and just like, hey, let's go. We've been doing like more and more Instagram lives, reaching out to different facets of the community to make sure that, like, guys, let's not mess around. Like, the majority of alternative music is built on outsiders and objective kind of, you feel outside and you feel kind of alone, which is why you're drawn to this community that accepts you for anything you are. And a thing that concerned me, and I know Dan as well, was that in this time where you're not, just as much as we relish being able to go away and kind of turn off and just be in a band, like, the fans rely on meeting each other and meeting up outside of shows and having that music and having that moment. And if you take away that sense of community from them, to a certain degree, you're taking away one of their only support networks. So we, you know, even without an album, we would have still wanted to instill this level of community that it's still there, regardless of whether or not we're playing shows.
No, that's really interesting to hear. I mean, especially like not taking advantage, but just being able to use this time especially to have that extra level of connection with your audience and fans and have like that. Yeah, it must just be like the greatest feeling in the world right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those things.
I'd still like to be playing shows.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, isn't it? It's all under a caveat of like, you know, this is really, really strange. But as I said before, it's that kind of like, well, it's strange for everyone. So if it is, you know, it's in our lifetime, and it is all of our lifetimes, you know, it's probably the only cataclysmic event that has happened in history that has caused us all to be really unified in our mindset. Fingers crossed, yeah. fingers crossed it doesn't happen again, otherwise I don't think our band can survive it again. But it is that, you know, that feeling of community is inherent anyway, and that isn't usually a thing. Usually you have to pull it and grab it and be part of it. So I think it's good. You know, I also think there is a level of, and I said this controversially the other day, and I don't really know how it landed, so I don't really care. So it's, for me, it's, there's so many cities in the world where there's so much going on. There's so many shows going on, like, and it's just, you know, scenes have died. You know, local venues have. It's not COVID that's caused local venues to be in strife. It was a long, like, drawn out discussion far beyond that, and it kind of makes me think as to when it all kicks off and restarts again. Will there be a resurgence in people just going to shows just because they want to connect again with something that they didn't have? You know, age old phrase, absence makes the heart go stronger. I mean, will music have that unifying feeling again, where Download would sell out every year, Slamdunk will sell out every year, the local venues will be filled, you know, with whoever they bring
new in. Rave will be back.
I think what we need now more than ever is the Klaxons again.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
Most clear statement of COVID.
Yeah, my favorite time in the world is that 2006 to 2010 new rave indie live scene where everything was about live music. You could go into a Weatherspoons and you'd hear the next big indie band. It was the greatest. If you liked guitar-based alternative music, you could literally go anywhere. Everywhere was like South by Southwest. And I know that's probably like probably a bit rose-colored spectacles, but you know.
Like, yeah, it probably is.
Yeah.
How many snake bite deeps were you when you went through Weatherspoons? Next big thing.
Four like shows. I was like, you'll be amazing. Let me manage you.
Like, I bet the Weatherspoons were playing like the Klaxons, and Dav were like, oh, next big thing, they're playing it live.
You say that, mate, but it's in that era where literally Enter Shikari probably played everything with a PA in this country. Like, it's like that exact same time. Like, oh, what's that? You've got a Bluetooth speaker, Enter Shikari. We'll play. We're there. All there, mate. Pass me the aux cable, Rouse on.
if we can get the track on, we are there, boys. Get it going. Brilliant. What a time that was. 2006. Jesus Christ.
Oh mate, it was the greatest time for live music. I don't like it was as MySpace was at its peak, wasn't it? And I've talked about this a lot. I think that MySpace for us was one of those things that we kind of came out just as metalcore had kind of see you later, it's over, you know. I remember
we smashed it with our time in.
Yeah, we released our first album, and within a month of that album I remember seeing a magazine cover and it just said metalcore is dead. I went, oh good.
Yes, I was open. It was actually
the album review, that's what it was.
Oh.
But I've often said that because MySpace was like this peer-to-peer platform, that we were able to ignore whether or not we were popular or not and still play to people every night. And I think that happened for a lot of bands around that time. And for us, we wouldn't have ever got round to that kind of metalcore resurgence if it wasn't for a platform. And I do think that when I think about it now, that really did make us the band we are, because we'd literally be chatting to Barry in Derby, who's putting on his first show, and you know he's got a case and that's it, so come on, get on, and like we'd be making friends with our fans because they'd be putting us on. And I think that's lived on in our career.
It's not only just that, I think also, you know, when you have online platforms, and the biggest thing that online platform did, not only give you a global fan base or an immediacy to having a global fan base, but it also gave you the ability to see the scene kind of for what it is and kind of understand what a true finger on the pulse is. You know, you could see what was going to be big because things were moving and shaking. Whereas actually, you know, prior to that, like I really don't I don't remember a time where it was, you just had to go with it. You had to go with your local scene and then hope that your local scene was the next big thing. Whereas now, whereas in like the MySpace era and onto Facebook and whatever it is now, like, you know, there is that level of like, you can just feel what's going to be next and you can see it rising exponentially, you know?
I think the difference between then and now really was, is that now you don't, and I can't believe I'm saying this, for I've just spent the last half an hour talking about how much I miss live music, but the difference between that MySpace era and what I would call like the YouTube generation now is you can have a music career without ever leaving your house. Like you could legit have a music career. You could do your live shows as sessions online. You can release your music directly peer to peer. Like that's the, you know, you could live anywhere in the world. And as long as you've got stable music, a stable internet connection, you're sorted. And I just think that that is the single biggest factor in why live music is important, is because it doesn't change the music scene, but it doesn't give you those memories and those moments. And that's what's important about live music, is you will always remember a moment from a gig. You will always remember a moment from a festival. And that's why it's so important. That's why people feel weird right now, because they're not making memories, like, to a certain degree. They're remembering this crazy time as one big thing. They're not pinpointing, oh, do you remember that time when this happened? Like, that's what's so hard about not having the community.
Yeah, definitely. People are finding it such a weird time, because, like, for me, for example, at the time of recording, it should be right in the middle of festival season. And for like the last 6 years, I've been at a festival every month over the summer. I've made friends, I've met people. It's some of the only times I get to see people and friends in my life. So, yeah, it's nice that even though we are all going through this strange thing, that there are these platforms that we can still kind of build on the community and interact and everything.
Yeah, man. I think, you know, like I said this right at the start of the whole thing, is that this isn't about social distancing. This is about physically distancing from people. And it's so odd that we adopted this phrase, which is absolutely nonsensical in its nature. Like, we're not socially distancing from people, because you're still having conversations. You're still trying to interact with people. It makes zero sense. And the fact that it's cottoned on is just, it seems bonkers to me. It is physical distancing. That's what we're trying to do. But you need to make sure that you're socially interacting arguably more than you would have been, because you haven't got those social cues that you have in everyday life, where you're walking along the street and you can kind of have an interaction, or you can go and see your family, or as you said, go to a festival and have all those kind of normal social cues. So it's almost like you have to make a concerted effort, a further concerted effort, to be more socially interactive, but on a digital platform. But it is just a really, as soon as they brought out social distancing, I was like, no, that makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
Do you know what? I never thought about that until you just said it, though. And yeah, you were dead right. This physical distancing. I'm going to call it physical distancing from now on, because
you'll give up like I did, though, because it's everywhere.
Yeah, you start going, oh, yeah, you know, I've been physical distancing. And then people go, what's that? And you go,
yeah, you just don't want to explain it.
Right. Yeah, I get it. Same thing you've been doing, but I've been doing what it actually should be called. You bastard.
I do think the hardest part is like all of this is just the fact that it's what everyone talks about. Your podcast must feel so hard to kind of motivate people to not spend the first hour of each podcast just talking about how shit COVID is. I mean, we should be at festivals. We should be hanging out with people who we call our friends but see once a year. We should be talking about our record, but it's so hard to focus on that because we're like, oh yeah.
Well, right now, sorry to break it to you, but you guys should be in Grass Pop, I believe.
No, that's the best festival ever.
I'm really trying not to talk about where I should be in June, because I miss Greenfields, man. Like Greenfields Festival in Switzerland. That is, if anyone listening to this ever is like, oh, should I go to a festival outside of the UK? Go to Greenfield. It is stunning. You're like playing in a postcard and it's just got metal everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. We did Greenfields, our bassist left, because they give you, well, I don't know if it's the same, but they give us like a cabin to stay in up on the mountain. You come down from there, then takes ages to get to the site, which is on the floor in front of the massive fucking mountains or whatever. Our bassist left his bass in a cupboard at the top of that mountain.
We can top that in terms of leaving your instruments.
Oh, go on, please say.
Oh, here we go.
Our boy Dorse drove, like, we did, what, like, 13-hour drive, Dan?
Yeah, so it was from Southampton to Trier in Germany. So it's about, I think it's southern Germany. So it's about a 13-14-hour drive straight.
We get there an hour before we go on. An hour before we go on. Everyone's getting their stuff together. Like, Dorse, where's your guitar, mate? And I shit you not, he checked under the tyres. of the van. Literally. Are you there? Like...
He doesn't remember this, but I vividly remember him tapping his pockets when after he got into that moment of like just absolute, you know the feeling. Everyone knows that feeling.
We've all done it.
Panic of like, oh my god, the reality is slowly swelling in as Doris has looked under the wheels of the van, and the best bit about this whole thing is that, you know, usually you go, oh, well, there's a lot of bands playing, you know. There's a lot of bands playing. It'll be all right. Dorse is a left-handed guitarist. So we were sat there like, okay. And then lo and behold, Betraying the Martyrs pop up and they've got a left-handed guitarist. And he turns up and he just goes, yeah, here's my guitar. Here's my, I think it was a 7 or 8 string. There you go. And Dorse is sat there just like...
Dorse is like playing a left-handed cricket bat.
Yeah. He still pretends that that is his worst show that he's ever played to date. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible.
The thing is we've all done stupid stuff. Like, I'm usually the worst for it. I'm absolutely terrible in terms of falling over, falling off stages, smashing guitars. Oof. Like... not even in a rock and roll way. I mean, I'll just like, I'm a fat guy walking around the stage falling over. Like, it's not, we got a great video online of me that like the riser had moved when I jumped up onto it. I'm a big boy. What can you say? And our tour manager ran on to hold the riser and I stepped off the riser and just flipped over the top of him and just smashed my guitar.
Oh,
like, cool.
Oh, no, the best one. So this is still on, like, so he does this every tour. Dan will injure himself. It's incredible. And then I lost my fucking mind on the last tour because we played Newcastle and there's like a step to get on the stage and it was the fucking best thing ever because we were playing No Less Violent. So the intro kicks in and, you know, we were like what, 4 weeks in? So we're like, it's a well-oiled machine. You know, we paid for the, you know, as you do, Sean, we paid for the extra. We got the lighting guy and we got the monitor guy.
Yes.
You know, we got a monitor guy. We weren't riding off the X32 on this one. And so we were at that point where we're like so well-oiled that you almost become a little bit like
complacent.
Complacent and arrogant in the, when you're going to walk on stage, you're like, oh, fuck it. I'll take my time. Even though the vocals are about to kick in. I was like, whatever. Dav's doing the same thing in his mind and Dav just goes to walk on stage and just went literally stage.
Before you go any further, I am really blind. I am really, really blind, yeah? And I don't wear contacts on stage. So the second these come off, yeah, that's it. I'm hoping, I'm praying that the blurs I see are enough to get me through the show. Yeah. It was terrible when we were playing venues where we all had to cramp up. I would get hit with guitars in the face, cymbals, everything. Yeah. But this step definitely was bigger than I thought it was. So I...
Yeah, obviously. That's the reason why you took the whole proxy of you tripping is because it was bigger than you thought it was.
I got really arrogant this night. Really arrogant this night. And I'd rolled my volume on before stepping on stage. So as I hit the ground, it was like...
And all the... Yeah, Sean, I've got a wireless mic as well. So I had my wireless mic on me. And I just turned it on and I was crying with laughter, like yelling. And so it just came out from the front of just this absolute pandemonium. And Dav's there like hobbling back on.
I thought I'd dislocated my knee.
Loser. Wow.
But I need what show that was and the date as well, please.
Riverside in Newcastle
on the last tour.
December... Oh, probably December
something.
He's going to be searching for videos for that everywhere.
The image of him falling over and then just Dan laughing down the mic, just coming over the PA.
So we played a show when we were really young at a venue. I don't know if this will ring any bells to you, but this was proper on that circuit. Lowestoft Sea Breeze.
Ooh,
do you remember that one?
Rings a bell.
Yep. So we were there back in the day. We didn't have any frills, mate. I didn't even have an amp. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I plug straight into the PA, like, fuck it, bass, let's go. Yeah. So,
yeah. He's really edgy. Yeah. He loves it just on a DI. Oh, he's so edgy. That's what he was like. He was like, oh, yeah, look.
Yeah,
so
edgy. Can't afford an amp. Can't afford an amp. So we ring out and we're like, yeah, I jump. I'm not even joking. So I just bought a new bass. Yeah. Saved up for it and everything. Yeah. So I jump up and as I land on the floor, it's like a hall for a bar mitzvah. So, you know, you got like carpet everywhere apart from like the dance floor. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure that is. They have specific.
Yeah. It's a bar mitzvah hall. Just obviously. Come on, guys. Bar mitzvah hall. Yeah. So I jump up and as I land, my feet just go zoop like this. And my only thought was save your bass. So I cover my bass like this and my feet bounces. Oh, just like,
ouch.
Yeah, all over a lot.
Yeah, I remember Bob from the Blackout. We were playing in a place called the Windsor, which is a terrible pub in a town called Neath. And he borrowed his father's PRS. His father had like a really old PRS or whatever. So he's playing in like a... He trips up and he starts to fall. And the only place for him to fall, right, is like a gap that big between the two monitors, right? So he's playing guitar, he starts falling, he brings his guitar up dead straight, right, next to his head, so like the, it's there, like a, and he falls in between the monitors, and he literally just misses. If he had been like 4 inches either way, he would have killed himself, but he missed.
Fuck yeah.
And he just landed in between them. I love a good stage fall.
We did this tour called the Stage Invasion Tour, where we did, we did, you know how people go, let's go back to the old venues we used to play. Well, we did that. We played 35
shows. Yeah, and then they do that, and then they go, oh, yeah, Academy 2s. Yeah, yeah. Go back to the old school. We'll play Academies. It's like, nah. We went back to this shit.
35 shows in one tour. We had one day off a week, and we just went for it, yeah? And we were legitimately, we played Two Pigs in Cheltenham.
Yeah, Two Pigs in Cheltenham, yeah.
We were playing like, between 80, I think 80 was the smallest, and that was the Anvil in Bournemouth, between 80 and 200 cap venues. And every single night of that, we were encouraging pandemonium.
Weirdly, it was weirdly that we pretty much had the same amount of people in there every night. It was like one of those where, you know, when you go back and there's no fire restrictions, because you go to the Two Pigs in Cheltenham and you just got a chap there that goes, I give a fuck. And then they ram in like 300 people, 300 of their mates, and they're in. And it was just a really odd and surreal experience because we also played a load of songs off Portraits that actually we hadn't played since we were playing venues like that. So we were just like, oh my God. Yeah, I remember moments being on stage with like in ears in at Two Pigs, just like, I'm playing a song that I wrote when we were like in 2008. And when I played it in a venue down the road that looked exactly the same as this in 2008. It was like just the oddest moment.
Yeah. What do you reckon is the strangest venue you've played?
Dan.
Oh, yeah. Mate, no, there's two. Two of the most weird venues I've ever played. One is in Middlesbrough, the Empire, and that place is fucking weird.
Yep.
The owner's a lovely, lovely chap, but we went there and it was around like Halloween. Well, it wasn't that around. I think it was like 2 fucking weeks off it. And the guy's decked out his whole thing. And he's a zany dude. He's a lovely dude, lovely dude. If he ever watches this, lovely dude. Book us back, don't book us back. But he walked in the venue and we're all like a bit knackered and stuff. You know, as you do, and you're like, where's the toilets and where's the fucking dressing room, please? And he walks in and he stopped us all and just went, gentlemen, look up. And we looked up and he just put like skulls everywhere. And we were just like, all right, mate. He was so proud of that moment. And it was one of those moments where you think, oh, he's definitely rehearsed that like all day. Just like, what am I going to say? How am I going to unveil this? And we always do that now. Literally, we're always like, look up.
Oh, wow.
And,
that's such a David Brent moment.
Oh, it was horrific, mate. Yeah, absolutely. It was so that moment. Funny, and we were all just like, oh, man, like, sweet. you know that request for the Wi-Fi at the dressing room? It's still there, please. And then the other one is that fucking place in Dover. Like, that is, like, just playing Dover is a weird feeling. When you've been in a band for as long as we have and you've used Dover as a fucking throughway for the past 15 years, you know, you've seen the Banksy on the wall 90 times. You've got on the ferry late, usually every single time. And you never see Dover. I'm like, oh, nice cliff. See you later. I'm off to France. And then, like, now we get booked in this place and I'm like, oh my God, this place is like, unlike anything else, because I think 90% of people or 99% of people just do what we do and just use it as a throughway. It's that 1% of people that stuck around that make up Dover, which is just makes it just a really surreal place. But yeah, that is a very weird venue.
I think the weirdest place we played, not in terms of any other reason than it was just such a weird backstage, was is it Fibbers in York, where it's
upstairs the strip club, yeah,
and it shares the same backstage. So you just like, oh, I'm just going to get ready, like, you know, cinnamon.
Yeah, all right,
in the mirror, cinnamon accidental. Next to me in the mirror.
Well, boys, what you want to do is when we're all allowed out again, you guys need to book a show in the White Horse in High Wycombe, right? Which during the day is a strip club. It's a pub. Right, but at the end where the stage is, they put in like a you can take out the pole. You load in through the side door, right? So you load in through the side door like that. Stage is you, right? I walked in holding a guitar cab, which is rare for a singer, but I was actually doing it this time, right? As I walked in like that, looked right, is a woman doing a split, just you, right? But she's doing a split up in the air. So I look and I'm like, oh my, literally a vagina is about 6 inches from my face, right? I was like, ah, oh, put your teeth back in, love. Oh, no, he wasn't. And yeah, that whole situation. She then chased me, right? She chased me. She was like, you owe me a pound. I was like, I was trying to get through. I just want to do a gig, love. I haven't come for this.
So that is just like what Kingston used to have, that venue. Kingston Peel used to be like that. It was a strip club on the other side. They had the divide and wall. And they used to walk around shaking pound coins for people. So it must be a thing.
What? That's...
Yeah. Yeah.
Why a pound?
Morgan, we've just broken Morgan. He's literally just like, what?
No, but yeah. It's just... Morgan. Like, to chase you and then ask for a pound. Like,
I mean, in all fairness, every time I dance, I ask... I go around with a pint glass asking for a pound, so...
Okay, right. Maybe that's where I'm going wrong.
Yeah, well, what I've started doing is, since meeting our woman, that entrepreneur, I've realised that if I just go around flashing myself now, I can just go around and just start charging a pound to everybody for it. So...
That, or you're going to end up like quite a few people in 2020.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
Sean, I don't want to see you get cancelled, mate. All right. Let's stop the flashing.
I've been trying. This will be the 84th episode, and I've been trying for 83 other episodes to get cancelled. If it hasn't happened by now, I'm jinxing it.
Which will you be more annoyed by, though, if the headline is Sean from the Blackout or Sean from Sappening Podcast? Ooh. Like, which one are you going to be more personally upset by?
I think a lot of people think Sean from the Blackout's probably dead, so
or being cancelled.
Yeah, or being cancelled anyway. Yeah.
He was cancelled about 4 cancellings ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was cancelled. Yeah, isn't that's why the band split up? Surely he was cancelled. Yeah. I go with Sean from the Blackout, I think. Because then I could probably keep the podcast going and slag off that fella Sean from the Blackout.
That's a clever idea, actually.
That's really clever. You could discuss it, couldn't you? What would be really meta is if you got him on the show to discuss it.
That is true.
Just pull like an old interview of you and just splice it all up.
Yeah, get on the edit, mate.
It's not a bad idea. Morgan, from now on, after this, you guys will be the last ever guests of this podcast now. Because every week I'm just going to interview my former self.
Can you make a Sappening Podcast app where we just make like a Sean soundboard out of like all the interviews?
Imagine how many terrible phone calls there would be. And I'd be jailed within 24 hours of that going live, I reckon. Other people would have got me in so much trouble.
Yeah, I think awful. People would frame him. I think people would frame him for a lot of crimes.
I'd frame myself. I'd go. I'd frame myself just to get away with what? It doesn't make sense. Yeah.
These are the stories. These are the stories people want to hear. I'm glad we've gone down this route.
That's the thing. People
are making fools of ourselves.
That's what people want. That's literally.
People literally want to hear what people are really like. What we found from these podcasts is people literally want to hear things like, what's the craziest venue you've played? Like, I know it's a bit of a shitty question, but to see the excitement on your faces when I asked that, and knowing that, you know, I was going to get to tell my white horse story as well. That I think a lot of people...
Himself up.
So my biggest claim to fame is upsetting our sound guy massively at Greenfield, actually. I should have brought this in there, do you know what I mean? But if you want stupid stories, so
go for it.
He is the biggest ever NoFX fan, isn't he, Dan? Like, he loves them. He proper loves them. Talks about them all the time. Massive fan. Yeah. So NoFX are playing Greenfields Festival, yeah? And he gets to meet Fat Mike. And he's just like, you know, so he's there and I walk up and he's chatting to someone and he's like, Dav, come here. So I walk over and he goes, this is Dav from Bury Tomorrow. And he goes, and Fat Mike goes, hi, I'm Fat Mike. Yeah. And without even thinking, I go, what's up? I'm Fat Dav. Yeah. And you should have seen is Dave's face. He looked mortified. He looked like I just pissed on the Queen. He was so upset. Because at that point, Fat Mike looked at me and just turned around and walked back into the dressing room. So like the whole conversation was just completely ruined. But from that day, I swore that I would only ever refer to myself as Fat Dav.
Yeah, I wonder if he was like just furious. Just fucking...
He's like,
the thing is, right? At the end of the day, he's in NoFX. You're not allowed to be ever angry if you're in NoFX because... You've made a career out of playing our music, so you should just be happy that you've cheated the system, I think. But any other awkward meetings with people? Have you ever met Jared Leto? He's an awkward one. He's a good guy.
No, I once pretended to be Jared Leto at a festival.
You pretended to be.
Yeah, so like, there was that download where where basically he had all the posters up like, this man does not need a pass. He can walk wherever he wants. It doesn't matter. So back then, I had very, very long Jesus hair. Yeah. So I legitimately, very drunk at download, and I for some reason, I seem to think that I'm God's gift to everyone when I'm drunk. Yeah. Can't help it. So I just walk in. This guy was like, "Have you got your pass?" I'm like, "Have you not seen the signs?" He's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Look at that sign right there." Like, I had a pass, so I didn't need to be an asshole. He's like, "Look at that sign," and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry," and just let me in. Like, this poor kid, like 18-year-old in a high viz, just made it.
And then the photo is, you know, Jared Leto with his fucking 12-pack out, and then you see that just two Strombos deep. It's me. He must have thought, "What a heavy paper round." But like, yeah,
I've photo really well.
So I've got one because we played Grass Pop actually, which is really good that we segued into that when we should have segued into it a couple of minutes.
We're not very
back.
Good at this, mate.
But, welcome to the podcast where nothing goes in the right order.
That's good. I watched John Davis actually, and he was playing. He's playing some of the Queen of the Damned songs, and Queen of the Damned is one of my favorite movies. And so I never, ever thought from that soundtrack I'd ever get to see it live. I thought it was always one of those things that's on record and that's that. But he actually played some of the Lestat the Vampire songs, and I was like half cut, and then I got very cut. So I was like, yes, sculled a load of beers and singing along. And then I go backstage after he played, and I grabbed two more beers, and I had two, you know, did the old double ender. I was like walking around with two beers, and I sat on this wall. And I was having a chat with Dorst and Dav, I think it was, and John Davis and the Entourage all walk backstage. So I'm like, oh, fuck this. I'm going to go say hello. And I got up and he stopped and went to shake my hand. And I just went, how's it going? And shook his hand. And then I went, oh, you know, great show. And he's like, oh, you liked it? That's awesome, man. And then I realized I had a wave as I was talking to him of like, you've just launched two beers behind you. Like, literally, you must have looked like a complete fucking nutcase. Just like, yeah, man, how's it going? And like, and then also trying to play it cool and be like, good set, man. You know, that was cool. Like, you've just launched two beers. Like, you might as well have just grabbed the guy and run off with it, you know?
Oh, brilliant.
At least you didn't throw him onto him. That would have been much awkward.
Or screamed as I did it, you know, like,
Me when I met Adam D the first time. Like, I was introduced to Adam D by someone at Download, and I just go, that's it.
Yeah.
That's my entire conversation with him. I was like, Killswitch Engage, you've got to understand, like, Killswitch Engage was like the pinnacle of metalcore for me. I was like, you know, it's fucking... this is fucking Killswitch Engage, yeah? And I'm just, it's our first Download. And I'm like, our press agent goes, oh, this is Adam D. I was like, I'm just, oh, I love you. I love your band so much. They're my favorite band in the world.
Well, that's funny because I did something similar to Mike Patton from Faith No More. The Blackout were playing Soundwave in 2013 in Australia, and Mike Patton was there with one of his projects. I can't remember. It wasn't Faith No More, I know that much. And we were playing a last song, which was a song called Higher and Higher, and then in the middle bit is a rapper called Hyro. And I would normally do his rap bits if Hyro wasn't about. And I was just about to rap, and I looked to our tour manager, who was stage right, and he went, look over there, Mike Patton's over there on the other side. So I look left, stage left, is Mike Patton from Faith No More watching my band. So I'm like, oh! So I throw the mic, I run over to him. Ah! I run over to him and I went, all right, I love you. Oh, fuck, I told you I loved you. Shit. I gotta go, I'm in the band. He went, yeah, I know. And I went, I gotta go. So I just ran off, finished the song, finished the set, looked back, he'd gone. I saw a tour manager and I was like, I can't, I just told him I loved him. I just told a grown man I loved him to his face. And then...
and he's enjoying your music and you launched the microphone.
Yeah, I just literally went, oh, I'm about to rap. Oh my fuck, it's Mike Patton. I love you. Oh no, I told you I loved you. I literally said, oh no, I told you I loved you. Ah, I gotta go, I'm in the band you're watching.
The only person who I've ever wanted to get a photo with, like legitimately really wanted to get a photo with, whenever I've been at a festival or something like this, we were at Rock Cam Ring, and I got to meet Beth Ditto, and we've already talked about my love of like early 2000s indie music, yeah? So for me, Beth Ditto was... I might as well have just been meeting Michael Jackson in terms of like celebrity status. And I get there, get a photo with her, and then just start showing her pictures in my camera roll. I don't even know why. I was just like, and I was just like, and then I showed her a picture of my daughter, and she goes, oh, she's so cute. Like, I could just eat her. And I'm like, you can. Oh no, this is all going so wrong. I need to go.
They're all just like David Brent, don't they? They're just like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to think
about it. You can if you want.
Matthew, the guitarist from the Blackout, right, who is literally the whitest and most awkward member of any band you've ever met in your life, right? We were side of the stage at Pink Pop in Belgium watching Dizzy Rascal play, right? And Dizzy Rascal came off. Right? And Matthew went on, like, we were standing there, and, you know, good show, gonna say good show to him. Matthew says, oh, good show. And Dizzy's like, oh, cheers, man. And put his hand out like that, right? So went to do the fist. Matthew, being the whitest man alive, goes for the handshake. And then all of a sudden, Matthew and Dizzy Rascal are playing rock, paper, scissors next to the stage. So, boys, just decide on one and go with it, for God's sake.
So, I purposely do that. So, if I know what someone's going to do, they can go in for a handshake and I'm going in for a fist. I do it on purpose because I love it. So, I love going for fists and doing the whole snail thing.
Oh, I love a snail.
But I also just love just going, and it's... there's something about it, and then shaking.
It's
or
the power.
Like,
it's I've got your go whole like arm.
Or just go like this, and then just be like,
Dan
and then
does
just
this
give
thing,
him a wet fish.
He does this horrible thing with fans when he goes to shake their hand, where he'll like, he's like two fingers go gimpy, and like as they go to shake his hand, they're like in the handshake. It's so grim. I mean, Dan does that, but he's like, has like these perfect photos. And then I refuse to do nice photos with people. I'm like, no, don't do nice photos. Like, because you can have a nice photo with anyone. With me, that's not what you're getting. You're going to get the most horrendous. So like, I'll lift up people's fringes. I'll lick their forehead just before it's about to go. Like, you know, remove their glasses so they can't, so I do make it my mission. And I'll tell you something, they remember the photos. If you ruin their day.
Yeah, and usually after, you know, like in signing lines, I usually know when they've come because they've either got fucking penises drawn on their face or like Dab's given them some kind of new eyeliner that he's drawn on with a Sharpie. And they get to me because I'm always at the end. And it's just like, what the fuck happened to you? I'm like, oh, this festival has been pretty hard. And they're like, no, I look normal. I mean, I'm on a day pass and I met your brother down the other end. And Dab's there like,
I love it. In signings, I love drawing on people. Like, it's one of my favorite things to do. Like,
odd statement for you to say. That's
I just love drawing on people.
You know what I love, like, guys? You know what's keeping me busy during COVID lockdown? It's just, I love drawing on people. It's just, you know, some people like skateboarding or some people like, you know, they get a pet. What I do is I love to master the art of drawing on faces with Sharpies.
You've got to master it to a point where it's like genuinely terrible, but still brilliant. Like, it's got to be so legible that you can tell exactly what it is, but it's got to look like an 8-year-old Russian convict did it in prison with a paperclip.
What an image of an 8-year-old Russian convict.
I think one of my favorite photos I ever did with a fan was they were just about to have this photo, and I think they've had like 10 photos of me at this point, and they've all been awful, genuinely awful. Yes, okay, let's have a nice one. And the look of shock on their face. They were like,
wow.
Okay. What? all right. And just as we're about to do it, I wiped off one of her eyebrows. Like, I literally, like, smeared her eyebrow.
Oh.
And there's just this photo of her looking like she's partially blurred, just looking at me going, giving me the finger. It was so good. So good.
That's a death wish, though. I'm surprised you're still alive.
I'm surprised he hasn't been cancelled for that.
Mate, I've pulled off eyelashes before. I've drawn on people. I colored this one guy's lips in with a Sharpie. Like, that was pretty impressive.
He probably died of ink poisoning.
Given them eyeliner, like, doesn't matter if you're male or female, you're going to get the same level of treatment. Like, I'm not sexist when I come to it.
He's an equal. Yeah, you're an equal opportunities colourer in a.
Yeah. Everyone gets a colour.
I think one thing people are going to be taking from this is just never to bring a Sharpie near Berry tomorrow, really.
Only bring Crayola.
Or chalk.
Oh, Dav, I see you've got a Viper brand t-shirt on. Am I right?
I do indeed, yeah.
What's going on here then? What's going on with Viper brand?
So me and Dan always do this thing around sort of like when we're coming up to an album cycle where we kind of chill a little bit, put all the effort into the band, you know, that sort of thing. We timed it definitely wrong with COVID this time, didn't we? So we were meant to be launching our brand new line in February, end of February, and then everything kicked off. Like, we buy a lot of our like wholesale products in from China, like most companies do, and that was obviously all the stuff in China was kicking off since November. So at this point, it's complete lockdown. So we were told there'd be a little bit of a delay, and then so we'd already started promoting. We've got a new line, we're going to drop a new line soon, blah 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 blah. And then literally, like, we just didn't have any information. Oh, it might be 6 weeks, might be 6 months. We were like, okay. So we basically had to like take a step back and just wait. And it's only now I've started re-talking to our wholesalers and companies that we're finally able to start production on all the stuff that we'd originally done. So I think we're aiming for July now, because obviously we really do want to get past the album now and really do want to kind of like move on. So, and that's the thing, me and Dan have never, although they're obviously linked, we've never wanted it to be like, we'd never sell like Viper at a show. Like, if you come to a show, you're there for Berry tomorrow, if it, you know. So we were not going to drop like you know, Bury Tomorrow related Viper stuff, apart from the name. But the name comes from the fact that Dan's, you know, got it tattooed on him, several thousand lyrics involving the word Viper. Like, so it's one of those things that we kind of had to take a step back. And the worst thing is, as well, I'm not even joking, I can show you a picture, yeah? So I showed Dan the entire line in December that we'd sent off, and in there were fucking face masks, yeah? I'm not even joking. So we were doing like these black face masks with the logo on the front, the smiley, and we were doing them. And I was like, I said to Dan on the phone the other day, didn't I, mate? I was like, if we'd have brought them out in February, we'd be millionaires.
Fucking millionaires.
You would.
Or liable for a load of people wearing them with no protection whatsoever, like most other companies. Like, yeah, I'm fine.
Now we've dropped that one from our line because we're like, nah, it's poor taste now. So we'd actually done this whole line, curated this whole line. It's very much like off-white style fashion, like very almost like
Japanese culture, Japanese skateboarding culture.
Yeah, yeah, new online kind of like e-boy meets skater kind of vibes, you know how it goes. But yeah, so the face mask worked really well as part of that whole collection, you know, a bit like Scar-Lord if he was a skateboarder, like that sort of thing. And yeah, and so we dropped it from there. We've also dropped a couple of other bits because as well, we're just like, some of the slogans on there now, I'm just like, are people going to think this is because of COVID? Like, you know.
Pandemic, you know, we had a hoodie that just said pandemic.
Yeah. if it said something like catch the disease or something like that, like maybe it's like
yeah, it looks like it's one of those herd mentality Boris Johnson pro t-shirt or something. Like, yeah, catch the virus,
catch the disease, vote Tory, like
make COVID great again or something. You know,
just got the exclusive there, Sean. You just got the exclusive July.
Nice.
Don't know
nice.
A date. Ooh.
There you go. Yeah, so this will be coming out July 3rd, is it, Morg?
Oh, cool. This month, there will be is a it? New Viper. In that case, well, let's just do a post plug. Like, thank you so much to everyone who bought Cannibal last month, got us to number one in the UK album charts. That's incredible.
This will be the week before, I think, the album comes out. So you should do... Check out. Oh, next
thank
week.
You, yeah. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Next it's week, check out.
Thank you to everyone that's getting us to number one. Thank you so much, well, everyone.
I was just going to say, even though I love the way this has turned out, we should probably talk about the record a little bit.
Absolutely.
No, as you mentioned, your sixth record now, Cannibal, is being released 3rd of July. You've had to push it back a little bit with everything going on, but listening to some of the singles and stuff, it seems to be a host of some of your heaviest work, some great new melodic parts as well, and just, as you've said, a lot more personal on many levels. Can you just talk to us a little bit about the really creative process of it all, especially coming off the last cycle of Black Flame and how successful that was and really how proud you were of that?
Yeah, man, I think I think you hit the nail on the head, is that we were exceptionally proud with Black Flame. It did more for us than anything prior, by quite an exponential level as well. It was one of those things, we were in a weird dichotomy with being in our band, in that there was a massive disparity between kind of UK and how big we got there to like everywhere else. And we were doing good numbers in places like Germany and stuff, but really it went from, you know, being 1,000+ caps to going back down to like, say, 300-400 caps was like our maximum. And Black Flame just connected with Europe on another level. And so Germany now, I would argue, we play bigger venues than we do in the UK there, and we've grown in the UK as well. So, and it kind of just pushed us to that next level. It just seemed to connect with a lot of people. Part of that's probably subject matter. You know, the whole record was around, you know, being thankful for our fans and thankful for the last, you know, 12 years of being in a band, and kind of put to bed that, like, you know, that whole period of time over 5 albums. And like, you know, we've got to this stage now, and fuck yeah, thank you so much for that, and it's all about you guys. And then, you know, we got to writing, and we tend to get to writing like quite rapidly really with every record. You know, to put it into perspective, we've got, you know, starts of demos now for the next record, and we haven't even released Cannibal. It's just that we want to stay productive, we want to stay certainly Dawson does, that's kind of how he works. And then we kind of got writing, and I'd already said to Dorse when he was writing the demos and stuff, because he writes demos, then we rip them apart, and it's that usual, it's like the new school way of being a garage band really these days, is that, you know, Dorse writes them and then we rip them to shreds in pre-production, and then we get into the studio, and that's kind of how it works. And through the record, there was just something about it. I said, I wanted it to be personal. I wanted it to be dark. I knew that. And then, you know, I've been doing off the latter part of Black Flame. I'd done these safe spaces. I created a lot of discussion around the normalization of mental health discussions, the reduction of stigma. And I'd done a lot of work there, and I kind of was at a point where I was like, well, we're at the best point of our career, the biggest we've ever been. You know, the boys, I'm the wellest I've ever been from a mental health perspective. Like, now's the time for me to go back and kind of retrospectively look at like what that feeling was. And so the album's like less about, you know, mental health conditions, like, oh, this song's about anxiety, this song's about depression, this song's about anorexia. It was more around like, you know, what it felt like to be in that kind of world of mental health or depreciated mental health. So I got writing and I kind of got stuck in, and it was dark, and I kind of just, because I was so well, I could take myself back to like the worst moments and really put it down on paper. And I really made a conscious effort this time not to hide things in metaphors. It was just, there you go, that's it. Like, enjoy it. And then we got to a stage, I think I was like six songs in, and the boys were kind of like, well, you know, if we're going to do it, like, you might as well just do it and just take it. And then I kind of then could give a bit of freedom to going back to maybe some of my other lyrics and pushing it more, and really, really just being honest. And I suppose there's just an inherent sense of hypocrisy if I'm telling people, like, you know, talk about it, be part of it, you know, reduce stigma. And then my biggest platform that I have, which is being in this band and making music and writing lyrics, and arguably the things that people listen to more rather than kind of interviews and talking to me live, is our music, you know? So it was like, all right, well, this is it then. And if the guys are okay with it, then I'm okay with it. And, you know, I needed to make sure that I was in a good place, that because I knew that we would be having discussions like this for, you know, for the next year and a half of my life, I'm going to be having discussions about how personal this record is. And I need to be able to make sure that I'm in a good place to be able to do that. But actually for releasing it and getting it ready, you know, this, it's, as I said before, kind of about COVID, and something nice about being in a band for so long is that you generally aren't surprised by much. You know, you've got levels of excitement about big shows or the record going off, or, you know, it doing better than what you thought it was going to be. But generally you're in that vista of like, I get it, you know, I know how this could go. But the emotional connection is something that we haven't felt like we've felt on this record, you know, before in 13, 14, 15 years. And, you know, we played The Grey live on the last Black Flame run. We released it and played it live. And it was just a moment, you know, I pride myself on being a frontman that is, you know, I grew up watching Jacoby Shaddix and watching Corey Taylor and Misery Signals, Carl. And I wanted to be that frontman. It was like stoically, like, I've got this. I'm a showman. I can do that. And what The Grey did was unlock something new in our band for all of this time, is that that emotional connection that you can't do that. Like, I felt like when I was on record, when we were playing it live, I just couldn't be that like masked up, like, oh, I'm fine, like, this is good. I just could connect on a different level, you know, albeit hard. And it was harder to play that song than the other songs as far as like keeping my head right. But that, you know, and Cannibal and Better Below have just kind of, and Choke, you know, have just kind of grabbed this feeling. They haven't necessarily, you know, maybe we've grown, I won't know until the record sales come out and we play live shows, but, you know, but what we have done is really lived by the sword and been honest, and we've now enabled people to understand that we're a band that probably, or certainly personally, that we can have that conversation with us, because we kind of get it from lived experience as well. So it's a really interesting one, man. But it was a tough album to record, tough album for Jace to get his head around as well, you know, because he had to, you know, this record is about me, you know, and I thank these guys, like, you know, from the bottom of my heart, that they took a risk on, you know, on giving away an album, essentially. You know, they gave away the whole theme of a record, which is a huge thing. You know, coming up against Black Flame, which is our biggest record to date. And arguably, if we were to look like track and trend of like, what is the biggest jumps? Well, you know, it's like for like when we released Portraits to going into Union, and that was a humongous cataclysmic rise, albeit weren't as big as we are now. But in the same aspect between Earthbound and Black Flame, there was just this phenomenal rise. And then to your next record, your follow-up, the record, to then go, oh, you know, we're going to give this theme to Dan. It's like, you know, it's massive amounts of trust. But you know, it's important, you know, and as I said, I don't think we could have done that if we weren't in a position where we've gone to bed, put to bed those five albums before and gone, thank you, everyone, for just being you and being amazing people. But this is the first album we can introspectively look at it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and as you mentioned there, I think a lot of bands tend to preach a lot of subjects in different aspects and whatnot, but don't really pull up on it and showcase it more in ways. But on the last tour especially, you were doing a lot of safe spaces sessions before gigs, interacting with fans, talking to them about mental health problems or just issues in general. How did all of that play a part in this record as well, and just that experience of being able to connect yet again with your community on another level?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know, it was hard work. I'm not going to say it wasn't. And it wasn't just hard work of like logistically organizing. That was the easy part. More like getting yourself able to kind of hear. Because when you open up a conversation about mental health with people, you know, that is, you unlock serious conversations. You know, you're not talking, you're not shying away from conversations about suicide or abuse or, and it was savage, you know. It was really, really tough to hear. And I made sure that I had a clinician with me at all times for triggering conversations and did the clinical aspect of it, you know. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, there's a lot of virtue hunting at the moment. A lot of looking for a place, you know, looking for, oh well, I've supported that because I'm you know, I've put out a post, or I've written a statement, or I, you know, whatever. And I think mental health was one of those things that, because I was so passionate about the fact that I had lived experience in that, but then also understanding that I have no idea what people's personal experiences are. I have absolutely, my anxiety, my depression has no relation or bears no relation to my neighbor who has that, you know. And it's about understanding that, but then understanding that we are here to support each other, and that people do feel things that are odd and different and makes us feel strange or makes us feel like we want to tear our skin off. And it's really just part of my condition as well, is that this kind of logical way, when I was in my worst place, you know, this logical way of articulating what I'm thinking and trying to kind of put it into some kind of sense, actually helped me work through that. And I think for some people that came along to those safe spaces, and, you know, we did 7 safe spaces, and Dav came along to a couple of them as well. And what I think it did for people is one, you know, it gave them that, it gave them an opportunity to share. And perhaps, you know, some of the people that we were speaking to, you know, they've never had an opportunity to share, you know, and, or they've come from really, really dark backgrounds, you know. And it was a great opportunity to signpost people and use a bit of my kind of clinical knowledge, or not as a clinician, but knowing the clinical lines that people can go through. And that gave me a bit of confidence in understanding that I've got some knowledge now within that. But then also it gave, you know, it gave me, it wasn't just a selfless act. It gave me so much, you know, and it was a selfish act in partly, because, you know, it was also an opportunity for me to experience some monumental things, you know. So we had someone come out gay for the first time. We had someone say that they felt that they were trans for the first time ever in their life, you know, which is a monumental occasion someone to do that. You know, that is an immense amount of kind of, you know, so they should be immensely proud of that moment, you know, articulating that to the world. And we, you know, and then we also had people, sadly, but, you know, sadly enough, but also in a, it's positive that they've managed to do that, admit abuse, you know, sexual abuse, psychological abuse that they've been going through their whole life, or incidents that they had, for the first time they could talk about that in a group, which you don't really see the gravity of of conversations until you see something like that happen, and then it's out for the world, you know. And I think, you know, to tangibly link it into the record and how it kind of transitioned into that is that hopefully, you know, at base level, well, two things. One, I've gained so much about, you know, I've put my money where my mouth is. I've put it down on paper. I've made that step to kind of say to the world and all of our fans, without just going, well, if you want to come to a safe space, you can come talk to Danny about his mental health. Like, you know, that pocketed a certain amount of people that were already up for that. I've made it blatantly obvious with putting down the lyrics on this record that every single person that's going to listen to Bury Tomorrow is going to hear it from my mouth, you know, which is, it's in the selfish act is me going, wonderful, that's great. Like, I've done that for myself. I feel good about myself. But then also hopefully it enables people to see that whatever platform you've got, whatever, you know, forum you've got to kind of use it, whether it's one person or 1 million people, it's always going to be beneficial to at least articulate that to the world, you know?
Well, I think I've seen, I mean, I'm a lot more involved with the online community, I guess, than say Dan is. And we've never had like a fan club or anything like that ever. And straight away off the back of the Black Flame tour and the Safe Spaces and the new songs coming out, a group of fans set up, like, you know, a fan club called The Cannibals. Okay. And I watched it grow and I thought it was going to be one of those things we've all, you know, when you've ever been in a band, like, it's always like, you know, Bury Tomorrow Brazil, or, you know, like just a group of people gets used for a couple of weeks and then it disappears. Yeah. I've watched this thing grow and grow and grow over the last 6 months. And what I think is incredible about what happened in December, what's happened on the record and gone forward, is they're not talking about us in this group. Like, they're not talking about, they're brought together through a love of our music, and they're only there because they, but they're not talking about us. Like, there was a post in there today. I don't get involved. I don't, it's their group. It's their thing. I'm not there to promote the record. I'm not there to do anything. They asked me to join. I'm some eyes in there, but I never post in there, right? It's theirs. I want it to be theirs, yeah? But they're supporting each other, and like, they're openly talking about things, like really important things, and everyone is supportive. There was someone in there today saying that, you know, he's got to the point where he doesn't know if he can cope anymore. And we're not talking like, call me Karen, hit me up in my DMs, you know, classic like Facebook emergency services. Genuinely people signposting, genuinely people supporting and talking through coping mechanisms. And if anything, what I think it's done is mobilized our really, you know, the familiar faces in our fan base. Yeah. We've got like this core group of 1,000 people, for example, that is, they'll be there at every show, or, you know, that sort of thing, like, you know, around the world. If we're in this city, we know they'll be there. Yeah. But it's mobilized them to feel like they have the platform to help as well. And that, you can't make that happen. Like, you can't, you go and do this now, it's your turn. Like, either you do it, you don't. And it's genuinely driven by love and community.
And, you know, and you know, that was the last thing I asked, you know, people on the Safe Space session. You know, it was a reflective moment for people to learn some things, to, you know, articulate some things, to cry, to enjoy each other's company. But then there was also that moment where I asked people to kind of go and make their own safe space, you know, and whether that's them connecting with support networks that they have as their family, or whether that's doing exactly what the kind of Cannibals did. And you can bet your bottom dollar that pretty much every member of the Cannibals went to one of those safe spaces, and they did. You know, I know the people that are on there. I talk to them a lot. But, you know, I think as well, it's also about, it's really, really scary. You know, this world is fucking scary for people, and mental health is fucking scary. And it's really, really scary for people that have never felt that. That is the most debilitating position to be in ever, to be someone that has never, to be someone that has never, you know, felt that feeling of anxiety or wanting to rip your skin off and not really knowing whether you're going to be here in 5 years time, 2 years time, 2 days time, you know, and depression, not constructing a future, and that whole aspect. But I think, you know, that is a hugely debilitating thing. But being able to then show people that, you know, I'm not a clinician, but I've got knowledge and I can signpost people appropriately, and I've got that kind of governance part of it set up, and actually it's all right, you can support each other, because the majority of stuff that helps people is that ability to not only help other people, You know, if you were to go in your five steps to well-being, one of those steps to well-being is to give. And a lot of people think about, oh, it's monetarily, give to charity, and that makes you feel good. But it's not that. I think, you know, the five steps to well-being, I truly believe that one of that is giving a part of yourself to another person, you know, whether that's your family or your loved ones or a pet or whatever it may be. But then there's also giving your time and your energy and your space to someone else, because what that not only does is it affects the person that you're giving to and makes their life better and more positive. But then also it physiologically changes the way you think, from endorphin release, you know, in the part of your brain, part of your amygdala, and understanding that it fundamentally changes what your brain is doing to make that, you know, you feel better and more light and more like you're helping. And at base level, it makes you feel like you're connected again to the world. And when we talk about, you know, going all the way back to the start of the conversation is, you know, when you talk about COVID and the hardest part of this is that we don't feel connected, you know, and that's why I'm so on it with the social distance and physical distancing, because it pains me to think that people aren't socially interacting with people. It makes me very, very sad. And it makes me worried that we're going to have pockets of people in this world that are very, very lonely at the moment, you know, and that goes for COVID. It goes for over Christmas time. It goes for winter in general for people. It's a tough time, you know, but any time of the year, you know, and whether you're 80 years old or you're 8 years old, it can be a very lonely place, you know, so connection is really, really important.
It's a weird place to be in a band, to be so proud of the new music that you've created. I genuinely think that Cannibal is the best album we will ever write. I do. I genuinely think that. I know every band thinks their latest record is the one, but genuinely think we've reached a new level here. But to sit there with my brother and to explore those lyrics, and particularly there's one track called Dark Infinite, and the only way to describe it is like finding someone's suicide note, like, you know, when they didn't do it. Do you know what I mean? It was genuinely harrowing to sit there and read these lyrics and go with Dan and be like, because I've known that Dan struggled, but to have it written in front of you and just black and white, no metaphor, literally like, this is what it was tough. So now we've just spent an hour where I've been a twat and just like fucked about and we've told stupid jokes, but I'm now thinking about that on stage. I'm now thinking about when we're playing these songs, when we're playing The Grey, when we're playing Cannibal, like this isn't, it's not like acting anymore. There's a certain amount of being in a band that's like acting. You're in a band, you're on stage, you're acting. This is real life. It's, you know, all of a sudden we're in a reality TV show. We're not in a movie, and that's tough. But that's my brother doing it, you know.
And so someone asked me a question the other day, and it was a really well put question. I can't really remember how it was phrased, but it was really around, like, you know, why is the album essentially so dark, you know, and it is so dark, you know, and when you can retrospectively look, I'm still here, you know, I'm still me, I'm still doing what I do, I'm still putting 120% into being optimistic and positive and being me, and that is what I've been like online for the whole of my career, which I'm proud of. You know, I'm proud that I can't look back over, you know, the 15, 16 years and look back and go, fucking hell, I had a cataclysmic change where I wasn't ethical and I was a rock star and I felt like a complete twat. Like, I don't have that. You know, that's one thing that I will end this band with, an accolade on my shoulder that goes, you know, I stood by having integrity and morality and ethical, you know, that was what I was about, you know. But the reason why the album's so dark is that mental health sucks. Like, it sucks. It's not nice, you know. And I wanted to push myself to explore the part of my brain that I never want to experience again. But actually, you know, in that is a realization that I will always experience that. For the rest of my life, I will have tendencies and peaks and troughs where I can possibly experience that again. You know, that's the nature of having generalized anxiety disorder or chronic depression, is that happens, you know. And I think for me, it's really, really important that I put it down on paper as a timestamp for me to be able to kind of go back and go, that happened there. I articulated that. And I know that I can get in that, because also then it gives me a real blatant, and other people, a real blatant opportunity to kind of see themselves and similar traits as to where they felt when they had depreciated mental health, you know?
Oh, no, that's, that's awesome. Thanks for opening up about it, boys. I know, like Dav said, we were pissing about and stuff earlier, but I think this more than ever is like the really important thing now. Like this is, you know, we're losing friends to it. I'm seeing, like, you talked about community then, and now you've accidentally created a community. We've done exactly the same with the podcast, and we never thought, like, we started a Patreon and we were just like, oh, well, just if we can get a couple of quid in just to, you know, pay for fuel to get to these gigs or whatever. And it has become this amazing thing where people are supporting each other, people are looking out for each other, people are travelling to each other, people are sending gifts from Australia to Wales, from New York to Germany. It's mental. And I think, more than ever, we all need other people and help. And I think what you've done, especially with the space, the safe space stuff, because I remember I was talking to Simon from Junior, because you did one at Heads Above the Waves, right? And yeah, it was just such a good idea, and I just can't get over no bands have kind of done it before in that sense.
Yeah, it's weird because you know plenty of people have though, Sean. You know, I think that you only need to look at someone like Lewis Capaldi at a global level. You know, the guy has openly admitted, you know, what he's got, what he goes through. But then he's also created therapy spaces within arenas for people to go when they're having crises, you know? So that whole thing is really, really important. But I think on base level though, man, like if you can do anything, that's a win. Like if you can just talk about the moments, you know, there's a load of things, and whether you're talking about it from a business perspective or a strategy perspective, or an OD, an organization development perspective, like my NHS world, or you're talking about it from just a personal connection level, vulnerability is power. Like it truly is. Vulnerability is so, so important, and being real. You know, one of the biggest things, I watched the PMQs, Prime Minister Questions, the other day. The one thing people call out now is when people are full of shit. And when you don't speak with conviction or passion, and you're doing that weird thing that all politicians seem to do where they speak for three sentences, stop for a bit, wave their hands a bit, and then continue speaking about stuff. And they've all come from this same Oxbridge world of like how they deliver things. That people see through that as a facade, you know? And for me, it is purely about the vulnerability, that honestly, if you know what, today was a shit day. It was bad. It didn't go the way I wanted it to go. Today's show didn't go the way I wanted it to go. Oh, well, you know what? Next day is another day, you know? And doing that, I think, so, so important for it. Not only showing authenticity as a human being, but then also for your own self to be able to recognize and regulate, you know? And in the same aspect, you know, talking about movements that are going on, you know, the things that should have changed a long, long time ago that haven't changed. I think it's really important for people to recognize that as well. Recognize privilege, recognize when you don't understand a community and a network of people or an ethnicity and you don't understand that, fucking educate yourself. Get yourself a book or go online. We've made it really bloody easy with the internet to go and educate yourself on history. Go and ask someone, you know, LGBTQ+, you know, go and ask those people, that community of amazing, beautiful individuals, what it's like to be them, because you're not going to know yourself without asking that question. And I think, you know, to kind of cut a long story short on it, is that one of the key factors of not having prejudice or not being prejudiced towards other people is being inquisitive. If you're inquisitive, if you're interested and you want to learn more, at base level, you can't almost be prejudiced, because you want to immerse yourself in those other cultures and those other, you know, the other human factors of this world. You know, it's really, really important that people do that. And mental health is no different. Mental health is one of those exact things of asks the question, why is it that when I could walk into work or tell another band member, you know what, I suffer with chronic depression, I'm not sure if I knew that I was going to be here anymore. They take a sharp breath in and don't want to talk about it anymore. Or, you know, one of my good friends has got psychosis, hears voices and has physical manifestations that he sees, which I find unbelievably frightening concept to think about, you know, the lack of reality. But why is it that then I go, oh, I don't want to talk about that? No, because actually I want to learn about it. I want to understand that, you know, it's all the same, you know. And I think that, I think we'd go a long way if people were far more interested in other people rather than themselves. I think we'd be a lot better world than what we are, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. Yeah. I think a lot of people listening to this will appreciate all of that, and they'll really help them with stuff as well. Yeah. Cheers.
It's all right.
No worries.
Should we go back to...
back to Jared Leto. Anyway, Jared Leto doesn't shake hands. No, that is true. He doesn't shake hands. Yeah, thank you ever so much for doing this, boys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, but not for just like having a laugh and stuff, but for just being so open and being able to talk about everything. I mean, we really do appreciate your time. And yeah, I'm sure it's hectic behind the scenes as well. We're trying to get this album ready now, so.
Yeah,
we're ready.
One final plug, fucking buy it, all right?
Because we're all poor.
I'm sorry, I don't want to work in the NHS anymore. Get me out, please. Please, I tell everyone I'm proud, but I'm not. I just want to leave, right? Yeah, I just want to live in a mansion with a fucking Ferrari. Yeah, can you just buy this album so that I can do that? Thanks.
If Dad just signed off then. Just speak.
Yeah.
Off.
Yeah, he should have logged. He should have gone then. It should have been black. Beep! Oh, he's gone. Dad's gone. But yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for your time. Thanks for everything. It's been fucking great. Good luck with the record. Good luck when you can finally travel and play shows again.
When we're allowed to actually go to gigs and all that, let's do another one of these in person.
But also, guys, I want to say on behalf of our band as well, you guys have supported us for a long, long time, not only as individuals and people in the media or in bands and stuff, but just as mates as well. So, you know, we've all known each other for a long fucking time, and it works both ways. You know, Morgan, you've interviewed us many times. Sean, yeah. We've been in many parties and we've had great conversations over the years, and we've all supported each other, you know, and the band, you know, the Blackout, when you were in, and you know, the genres weren't the same, you know, really, and you supported us through that, you know. We'd become mates out of this, so I think, you know, it, credit where credit's due. You guys have supported us, and that's why we're willing to do things like this with you guys, because we trust you. You're awesome human beings, so thank you guys so much, and congratulations on a bloody awesome podcast as well.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely, guys.
Thank you. To you as well on everything.
Yeah, it's all good.
You can use that as a soundbite if you want. That can be the trailer.
Yeah. Morgan doesn't need his ego inflating any more than normal.
come on, it's not that bad. It's not that
on the one, basically, on the one that's coming out this week, he basically calls himself Podcast Jesus. So...
I didn't call myself. No. You called me Podcast Jesus. I just didn't argue with you.
Morgan Leto.
He doesn't shake hands anymore either, does Morgan?
I'm taking back that. I'm going to take that statement back now. Well,
yeah, thank you very much for doing this. And hopefully we'll see you soon. Cheers. Thank you.
See you soon, guys. Bye. You're listening to
Sapin Podcast! Excellent. That was.
Yes.
Excellent. How long did we go? I thought we were only going to do about 40 minutes. And then I remember looking at my clock going, oh, we're only 5 minutes in. I've enjoyed this chat and it's felt like a lot, but we're only 5 minutes in. And I looked again and I went, oh, it's an hour and 28 minutes we've been talking. Wow. Yeah, what a great chat, though. Absolutely lovely, boys. Never had a bad word to say about the Buried Tomorrow lads. They've always been lovely. What a great band. And I genuinely believe this album will take them to the next level.
Yeah, it's surprising how time flies when you're catching up with people, but such great band, such lovely humans, doing a lot for everyone's mental health as well. So, I mean, absolutely fantastic. As I said earlier, the tracks they've released so far from this new album are sounding huge, heavy, just melodic. It's just... I can't wait to hear the full record. So July 3rd, that's next week if you're listening to this when this comes out. I don't know. So make sure and go and pre-order it from their website, bury-tomorrow.com. Or go and check out the record labels. Check your local record stores, because I'm sure they would love some business with all that's gone on in this COVID pandemic.
Are record stores open now, Anne?
It depends what country you're in, Sean.
I wouldn't be surprised if they are. You can't see a family, like, but you can go and rub backs with somebody looking for CDs. What a mad world we live in. Anyway, thanks again to Dan and Dav. Thanks for not just Bury Tomorrow and the music, but thanks for your work in and around the NHS. Yeah, it doesn't go unnoticed. You're a star. You're stars. So thank you very much, boys. We appreciate you greatly.
Yes, we do. We do very, very much. If you've enjoyed this episode greatly, then let us and Bury Tomorrow know by tagging us in some tweets or Instagram stories and all that malarkey. And you can give us a follow at Sapnin Pod. Sean, how do you spell our at?
At SAPPENINPOD. That's SAPPENINPOD.
Nice. And then if you're thinking, oh, there's more, there's something else, I want to check something else out, I can't get enough of this podcast, I've listened to every single episode, well, you're in luck, because we have exclusive content on our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin. We're going to be releasing a lot more. You get to join our community, meet new best friends, so why not go and check it out, patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes, come along, suggest topics, meet your new best friend, interact with us, and find out the guests early every week.
Yes, or just take the mick out of us as well. But while we're saying thank you to all the amazing patrons who support this podcast each and every week, we need to give a massive shout out to the elite members. Those are the top tiers and everyone that's in the description. But Sean is going to give a mahoosive, gigantic, and probably hilarious shout out to those elite members, because they've all changed their names to funny things and I don't have a clue what they're going to be.
Right then. But you've set me up to fail by saying they're going to be hilarious. But some people have changed their names, I guess, to Australian sentences. So here we go. Thank you very much to Mayumi Liwewe. Kylie, I'm not here to fuck spoilers. Wheeler. That was a terrible... I'm sorry. Mitch Perry, Amy Chilvers, Emma Barber, Janelle, grab us a frothy from your esky, mate. Caston, Amadine Bano, Julia Caesar Styles, Nathan Croshaw, Kelly Young, Ye, Nah, Ye. Dilly Stone the Flaming Crows Stewart. Oh, this is dreadful. Mo Dix Eyebrows Know What You Did in the Dark. Michael Engler, Liam Connolly, Kelly Irwin, Paul Hirschfield, Wargasm Fangirl. Can't blame him. Tom Owen, The People's Mo Dick Eyebrow, Kate Patak, Scott, you little Ripper Jones. Simon Amos, Ollie blowing a froth off a few, Amesbury. Jenny Flaming Galah, I love Kelly. Oh. Jenny Flaming Galah, I can't do it. Jenny Flaming Galah, I love Kelly Wheeler Munster. Emily, you bloody drongo Senegals. Kate Stevenson, Lucy Diaz, Martina McManus, John and Emma, Erin Howard, Kelly like a bandicoot on a burnt ridge, Mallory. Kelly Tyra, Kieran Lewis, Louis Cook, Marcy Jacobson, Mike Cunningham, Sarah Stewart, Jamie O'Jamie, Sandra Kuhacek, Podcast Jeebus Saves, Sean Smith Scores the Rebound, James McNaught, Livy Cropper, Sarah Furu's Loose in the Top, Paddock James. Sarah Furu's Loose in the Top, Paddock James. Kelly Emma Cannon, Amy Thomas, Tallulah Grant, Samuel Griffiths, Stuart McNaught, Lydia Henderson, Jenny Robertson, Tony Michael, Nuala Clark, spelled that wrong, Jordan Burchard, Becky Handy, and last but not least, Shanye West.
Yes!
I'm going to stop reading them out soon. You were going to have to start reading them out. It's too much.
Good call.
Do you know what? I think we might stop that tier soon, because there's too many bloody people in it now.
It is. Fair play to you each and every week, Sean. You managed to rip those names out and just go with it.
Yeah, 54 of the buggers at the moment. So, yeah. So if you're thinking about getting in touch with Patreon and you want to be involved with these silly shits who write different names every week just to piss me off, check out patreon.com/sapnin ASAP, because I'm going to stop people doing it, so it's going to be limited to some of only these buggers. So if you want to take the piss out of me, again, that's patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes, but thank you to everyone involved on our Patreon. We love you very, very much, and it's lovely to see how many people on there are communicating with each other and just getting involved and cheering each other up in all these weird times across the world. And thank you to everyone who's listening to this podcast right now. If you could go and subscribe on whatever platform you are listening to it, give us a nice rate, a like, a share, all those kind of things, it would mean the world to us and would make Sean smile more than if he had a million Easter eggs on Christmas Day.
None of that makes sense. Can we go?
Is there a word of the week? Is there anything you'd like to mention?
No.
Nothing.
Nothing.
All right. Everyone stay safe. Stay rad.
Nah.
Look after each other.
Don't listen to him.
And don't be a dickhead.
That's difficult. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. This has been Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and my good friend Mo Dick. This is the end. I don't mean of life. Hopefully not. Anyway, love you all. Peace out. Sapling!
Sapling!
You're listening to Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.